The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there, Nerd Clan. I hope you're having a great time checking on out the Potterverse. Don't forget, this episode is brought to you by MinuteWithMary.com. I'm able to help you feel more confident and creative when it comes to your makeup or skincare. I've got loads of new fun things coming up this fall, but one of the most important things I wanted to let you know about is I have dynamite skincare, and I have this brand new eye cream that has been amazing. Like, amazing. The results are jaw-dropping. So if you yourself are battling dark circles, fine lines, some bags under your eyes, I've got a dynamite eye cream. You can actually get it at a discount by going to minutewithmary.com/discount. Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the film and book universe. What? I was about to say TV in my dreams. So grab your favorite wands and time turners. Let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. And welcome. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I'm excited. I'm excited because I got some new sounders for this episode.
I am very excited for these sound
effects. Mary does not know what's happening. Mary does not know the new sound effects.
I don't even have my headphones on, so I should probably put them on for this episode.
Absolutely. And it's not even connected to the board. So
okay.
Mary, everyone on the live has been making fun of me because I'm slacking that I haven't fixed Mary's microphone yet. I agree, but Mary is now definitely slacking for not even connecting her headphones to the board.
I was on a Zoom.
Just throwing that out there.
I was on a Zoom. All right, so we're really excited to be joining you guys again for a new episode all about the Potterverse. Let's talk. It's going to be, of course, Chapter 13, Nicholas Flamel. And I'm going to read you one of my favorite quotes from this chapter. There's so many things from this chapter that were word for word pulled from the book onto the movie screen. And I wanted to pick something that was not chosen because this just like gave me all the feels, especially for those of us who know what happens in the books. There's no need to tell me I'm not brave enough to be in Gryffindor. Malfoy's already done that. Neville choked out. Harry felt in the pocket of his robes and pulled out a chocolate frog, the very last one from the box Hermione had given him for Christmas. He gave it to Neville, who looked as though he might cry. "You're worth 12 of Malfoy," Harry said. "The Sorting Hat chose you for Gryffindor, didn't it? And where's Malfoy? In stinking Slytherin."
Freaking Malfoy.
What a jerk.
What a total jerk.
Seriously.
But, you know, this works out really well for Neville and for everybody, because eventually he does gather some courage. And
I would argue that Neville has already shown immense courage. Lest us forget, he already saw the three-headed dog.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
And didn't die of fear in that
puke
very
all over
moment.
His shoes.
Yes. And Neville actually shows a great deal of bravery in this particular chapter. So I just thought it was fitting that we get to really see Neville's bravery start to evolve, even in the beginning of this chapter,
right?
Chapter 13.
And when you consider how far he evolves from where he is, even when he's making these assumptions about himself that he's not brave enough to be part of Gryffindor, all the way to the end of the series when he is battling at Hogwarts and he is fully taking relished moments in the idea of getting out there and fighting everybody,
yes.
And he feels alive while doing it. It's a great character arc and a great character journey for that particular character.
Agreed.
Someone that you could probably argue is just as important, if not as relevant as Harry Potter himself.
Ah, yeah. So before we delve into this episode, we would love to remind you to hit that subscribe button in the podcast. You can also find us on all sorts of social media by searching Mary and Blake. Follow us there. You can also head to maryandblake.com. If you've never been there, it's actually a very beautiful site. My husband designed it and it's very fancy.
Oh, thank you.
You can find all of our other podcasts and blogs there. And of course, we would love for you to be a member of jointhenerdclan.com, otherwise known as OutlanderCastClan.com. For as little as $2 a month, you can be contributing towards making all of this happen. It helps pay for really the studio and making sure that we can continue to create content for you to enjoy free to the masses. So think of it like if you're someone who likes to contribute to your local PBS, but instead of PBS, it's Mary and Blake. All right, guys, it's jointhenerdclan.com.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
Blake, are you ready for a quick little synopsis of what happens in this chapter?
Let's do it. What do you got?
Okay, so Christmas time has been going on. It's been really exciting and not so exciting. And then Professor Snape is going to referee a Quidditch match. WTF, mate? How does that even happen? Does he even play Quidditch? I don't know. Then they figure out who Nicholas Flamel is on a chocolate frog. Nom nom. Gryffindor wins the Quidditch match with Harry snapping it up in just 5 minutes. And afterwards, he sees Snape heading to the Forbidden Forest, where he talks to Quirrell about said Philosopher's Stone or Sorcerer's Stone.
Marvin, you're getting better at this. I don't have to play the land the plane anymore. What is that?
And Malfoy gets beaten up. Like, I'm just firing it off, man. I'm firing it off. So, of course, this is happening between, like, Christmas time and then, you know, in that earlier winter, earlier portion of the year time. Everyone comes back from the holidays. And Harry...
By the way, can we just mention
yeah?
that from, like, two chapters ago, the yeah? amount of time that has progressed... It's like what is this? Like this is after Christmas, so this is January, maybe February at this point.
I think that this happens into February.
So a couple of chapters ago, it was May. And now it is February.
When was it May, Blake?
It was not May.
Where have you been?
Not May.
It was Halloween. We had a troll in the dungeon.
That's what I meant. I meant Halloween. That's
and then it was Christmas.
Yeah.
And they found the book. Yeah. So here we are.
Sorry, I have May on the head. I don't know why.
It is the best month.
Yes, it is.
Because I was born.
That's true. That's what I meant. It was Halloween.
Now we're in February. Okay. Yes. We just have been through the doldrums of boringness. But I assume that Christmas break actually went on for a long time because, you know, Hogwarts is kind of like a boarding school. So maybe the kids came back mid-January or so and they've been doing some of their studies, practicing a lot of Quidditch. And can I just note that Harry got those chocolate frogs on Christmas? And
right.
he gives Neville one of them now. So he either had like a Sam's Club Costco box of chocolate frogs, or Harry doesn't have the biggest sweet tooth in the world and just like cherishes them bit by bit.
You know what it kind of reminds
Maybe
me of?
Maybe he eats like a frog toe.
It reminds me of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yes.
When he was like, oh, I just take one little bite
yep.
per day. And then,
yep.
you, and then you compare that to Augustus Gloop where he just eats all of it. All of that. And I don't know why. I'll never forget that lesson from... Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. You just take one little bite every day of this
right.
to make it last.
You know, Harry is a lot like Charlie.
Yeah, he's got nothing. Well, he grew up with nothing. And
yeah.
and now he has something, but
hey.
He appreciates what he's got.
Agreed. And is quite brave in the meantime. So, of course, you know, ever since Harry found the Mirror of Erised, he hasn't used his invisibility cloak since then. It like scared him enough. It scared him so much that he's been having nightmares mm-hmm. on a regular basis,
right.
hearing his parents scream, seeing a green light, and then hearing that high-pitched cackling laughter. And you know, the high-pitched cackling laughter, which we find out is Voldemort's laugh, that does not come through in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And it really gets you a lot in the books. And it actually reminds me a lot about the villain in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Oh, yes. But played by Christopher Lloyd, of
yeah.
all people, by
but
the
But that's
way.
One of the things that, is it Eddie? Is Eddie the human who works with Roger?
Yes.
Yeah, that Eddie like remembers is like, oh, that high-pitched laugh, that like crazy high-pitched laugh. So I picture Voldemort's laugh being that laugh
from Roger,
Roger Rabbit. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I suppose here what I think is funny is that this chapter is about Nicholas Flamel and finding out who he is and what he has done for the Sorcerer's Stone. But just as much as it is about Nicholas Flamel, it's even more so about the Quidditch. I mean, more Quidditch is happening, and it's happening in a big way in this chapter.
Do you know that Nicholas Flamel was a real alchemist? What?
How to tell when the hosts aren't listening.
When did you say that?
Last chapter.
Oh. You know probably why? I've been too busy focusing on moving my microphone.
Good point. Good point.
I could listen better if I didn't have to fidget with this thing all the time.
See, everybody is backing me up on the social.
Okay. So here we go. Yes. We've got... Can we just let's go in from, you know, the bits where Malfoy's beating on Neville, because we mm-hmm. talked about that a bit. So he comes in and he had the leg locker curse mm-hmm. hopping up the stairs. Harry pictured him hopping up all the way
just
to the Gryffindor common room, just hopping one at a time. I mean, let's be real. If Neville keeps getting cursed, he's going to have dynamite abs. And let's just say Matthew Lewis does have dynamite abs.
Well, not at the time, but now mm-hmm. he's got some dynamite abs.
Yes, he does. Well done. That leg locker curse did you good. but of course, you know, they have this really nice pep talk with him. We're like, Gryffindor chose you. And Harry gives him chocolate, which is interesting because in book three, we find out that chocolate actually has some pretty magical qualities to uplifting your spirits. Mm-hmm. It can help you when you're dealing with a Dementor, yep. actually.
Well, it always lifts my spirits, no matter what.
Preach.
Chocolate is the best.
But you know what brings down spirits?
What's that?
Hearing that Severus Snape is going to referee a Quidditch match.
Yeah, can we talk about something, a little thing I'd like to call in the legal world conflict of interest?
Mm-hmm. I mean, luckily they weren't playing Slytherin, because if so, I don't think that would have been allowed. So, of course, the upcoming Quidditch match is Gryffindor versus Hufflepuff. Mm-hmm. But if Gryffindor were to win, they would overtake Slytherin mm-hmm. for the points. So, and somehow, Severus Snape, who I don't picture being really good on a broom, nonetheless, watching that many players whiz across the field, because there's only one referee.
Yeah.
This, I mean, let's be real, this game needs like 10.
That, right? Yeah, and because they have over 700 fouls.
Yeah.
There's a long list of them.
Do you think Severus Snape knows all those fouls?
Actually, I bet he would.
Where's Madam Hooch?
Because he's that much of a nerd boy. But you are right, Mary.
Let's make a little story. What happened to Madam Hooch?
Madam Hooch was out there, and I feel like she was practicing on her broom.
Yeah.
And perhaps... perhaps Harry was out there practicing as well, and Quirrell was like, oh, dude, I'm going to go get Harry now. But he missed. He missed the curse and hit Madam Hooch. Mm. And Madam Hooch fell off the broom and into the lake.
Okay.
And she is currently getting better from hypothermia.
I don't think so. Want to know what I think happened?
What do you think?
I think Snape like got her sick or said, you know what, honey, why don't you go on a little vacation? Like maybe this was her week off. Okay.
Yeah. They gotta
maybe
get
this
weeks
was her
off.
Week off because... Snape did this, we find out in later chapters, so cover your ears, spoilers. He did this to protect Harry from Quirrell. We find this out later. Quirrell tells him, like, and Snape even made sure he could referee the next Quidditch match because mm-hmm. so I couldn't hurt you again. So Snape chose to do this. Maybe, that's what I bet. I bet he talked to Dumbledore and he was like, listen, Quirrell was doing some weird stuff. You told me to watch him. I did watch him. And
that's a good point.
I think I need to watch this next game because being in the stands, I wasn't close enough to save Harry. But if I'm there, and then Dumbledore was like, Madam Hooch, you know what would be really fun?
I love this voice.
How about you go to France and just like eat bread? Maybe have
some cheese. Maybe some brie.
Some wine. You know, I'm just saying.
Maybe you can go crazy and even bake the brie.
You know? And she went and she gallivanted.
Yeah.
And she had a grand old time. You could just picture her with a beret, with those crazy golden eyes and a big beret on that crazy gray hair. Loaf of bread all to herself. Man. And she was like, no kids in sight. So here's Snape, who we don't think of as a Quidditch player.
No. As a matter of fact, I don't think we ever see Snape on a broom at all in the films. He's always traveling by way of that dust, the black dust. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't. I think you're making something up.
No. How all the Death Eaters travel and they have that black cloud that follows them.
Yeah, that's like the Death Eater way of apparating.
Yeah, but the Order has the way of apparating. It's the white cloud that follows them.
That was like a thing that was made up for movies. It was pretty.
It was very pretty.
Because it makes it look like they can fly. They can't fly. Death Eaters cannot fly. Makes it very confusing. We see Snape fly when they're having like the Potters, when everyone's dressed like Harry Potter. That's the only time we see Snape on a broom in the latter books. Like, Snape's on a broom then. Snape's on a broom now.
But not in the film, though. Only in the books.
So he's on a broom now and is refereeing this game. Nobody seems to really have a big problem with it in regards to, you would have thought Minerva McGonagall would have been saying, no, I'll co-ref it because I'm actually a Quidditch player. I could have played professionally. What are we doing here? Or maybe Flitwick. Wouldn't that have been cute if everyone from the all four of them.
I cannot imagine Flitwick.
And Sprout, all chilling.
Teeny, tiny little Flitwick with his little legs on a broom.
He probably would be killer on the broom. I bet he's, he's great with just all of his little spells and everything. I feel like he'd be very nimble.
Mm-hmm.
I think all four of them should. So there's Snape.
Very nimble.
There's Snape, and everyone's nervous. And their game plan is to have Harry catch the snitch as soon as possible. Better game plan than Ron's. Ron's game plan was to break his legs.
Right. He's like, why don't you fake it? No, really break them.
Yeah, why don't you just actually break your legs?
It's fine, just break them.
Yeah, so Harry decides, with Wood, okay, I've got to get this snitch. That's the goal. And Harry catches it in record time.
Yeah, under 5 minutes. Someone no one has seen, or at least Dumbledore says that it hasn't been seen that.
I gotta say, this is Harry's first year of playing Quidditch.
And he's already done some really good stuff.
Yeah, but why doesn't he catch the snitch this quick from here on out? Did he just blow it that one time? Oh my God, I thought I was going to die. So I actually caught it really quickly. But after this, I'll kind of lean back. He kind of reminds me of the kid from The Incredibles 2 or Incredibles 1 when he finally gets to use his powers.
Oh yeah.
You could do it a little bit. But not all the time.
He goes and he eases off. And he goes and he eases off.
Harry Potter, who can catch a snitch in 5 minutes, doesn't catch it in 5 minutes ever again. We're okay.
that's totally fine. But, as we are talking about the... We already talked about, rather, the interaction between Malfoy and... Oh, and here's our little lass. Our little lass is joining us. If you're watching us live, you'll be able to see it. And for everyone on the podcast app, hey, Gremlin. Can you say hi to everybody in the podcast world?
Hi.
That a girl. We already talked about Malfoy and the interaction with Neville
in Hogwarts, but not at the Quidditch pitch.
Right, but there's something I did want to mention here that I really liked. Harry felt in the pocket of his robes. He pulled out a chocolate frog, the very last one from the box Hermione had given him for Christmas. He gave it to Neville, who looked as though he might cry. You are worth 12 of Malfoy,
yes.
Harry said. The Sorting Hat chose you for Gryffindor, didn't it? And where's Malfoy? In stinking Slytherin.
Stinking.
Neville's lips twitched with a weak smile as he unwrapped the frog. Thanks, Harry. I think I'll go to bed. And I find that just wonderful because Harry has spent so much time doubting himself and doubting whether or not he is part of this world. And here he is talking to Neville Longbottom, who, yes, is questionable in his wizarding knowledge or even his wizarding abilities, but he's part of a long-standing wizarding family. And here is Harry Potter talking to Neville Longbottom, giving him the kind of courage that he needs to stand up. And eventually, when he does stand up to Malfoy, it's really because of what Harry does here. And then something that also comes out of this too is the card from Dumbledore. Mm-hmm. Well, the card that comes from the chocolate frogs, that is Dumbledore's card. I love the fact that they were searching for so long to find out information about Nicholas Flamel. And in their least expected time to consider anything about Nicholas Flamel, here the answer pops up. It comes out of friendship. It comes out of something that was given to Harry from Hermione because it was Christmas, and it is then given to Neville, who then gives the card back to Harry.
Because he collects them.
It's this, and the only reason why Harry likes chocolate frogs is because Ron introduced it to him earlier in the book. And it's this notion of friendship that finally gains the answer. It's the introspective circle between the four of them that gives this discovery.
This is really, it continues to solidify this quartet as the island of misfit toys who band together. You know, I think because we're reading this so frequently from Harry's eyes, that we see him as this amazing, mighty being, the chosen one, and Hermione as the smartest witch in her class. But really, you're looking at Harry, who for 10 years of his life lived in a cupboard under the stairs and was told that he was worth nothing. Mm-hmm. Literally knows nothing about the wizarding world and yet is thrown into this as an awkward celebrity. Congratulations! Here you are! You're famous! And feels like he has to prove himself to everybody. And already has a nemesis while he gets there. It's not like he came in as Mr. Popular. I mean, yes, some people know who he is, but he still has to figure out and find his way. You've got Ron, who's the youngest boy in this giant family. Hermione, who, you know, was muggle born and her parents are dentists and probably was made fun of for being a nerd for the majority of her life and even was made fun of being a nerd in Hogwarts. And poor Neville, whose own family didn't even accept him. So here they are, like you said, they're able to bond together through friendship and they're able to see each other's extraordinary qualities and bring those qualities out. Harry's telling him, the Sorting Hat chose you to be in Gryffindor. And these people don't highlight each other's weaknesses. They celebrate their strengths. And it just continues to be stronger. You know, in the beginning, Neville losing his frog, they might have rolled their eyes about. Hermione saying, oh, I know all this stuff, they would have rolled their eyes about. But like in this chapter, you know, they talked about how Hermione always would lose chess and how Ron and Harry liked that she finally would lose at something. But they didn't say it to her.
Right.
They didn't say it to her because they're in that friendship land now that, yes, you know, maybe back in the earlier chapters, they would have said something like, served you right, you can't be good at everything. But no, they've crossed that line and they know that the friendship, they need to build each other up.
And not only do they build each other up, Mary, but they also continue to add and provide distinct qualities to the friendship. I mean, I love this. This is so Hermione, this whole passage. When she says, stay there, she said, and she sprinted up the stairs to the girls' dormitories. Harry and Ron barely had time to exchange mystified looks before she was dashing back, an enormous old book in her arms. I never thought to look in here, she whispered excitedly. It's another little girl. I got this out of that library weeks ago for a bit of light reading. Of course, first of all, Hermione, light reading these giant freaking books. Like, what the fork are we doing?
That's such a great part in the movie. Like they were able to show that and the thickness and the oldness of the book to make us laugh, you know, because of course you laugh a little bit while you read the book, but you laugh when you see it on screen. And we learn some really fun facts about Nicholas Flamel, that he just, when this book was written, by the way, which looks like it's an old book, he had celebrated his 665th birthday.
And I love this too. Light, said Ron, but Hermione told him to be quiet until she'd looked something up and started flicking frantically through the pages, muttering to herself. At last, she found what she was looking for. I knew it! I knew it! Are we allowed to speak yet? Said Ron grumpily. Hermione ignored him. Nicholas Flamel, she whispered dramatically, is the only known maker of the Sorcerer's Stone. This didn't have quite the effect that she'd expected. The what? Said Harry and Ron. Oh, honestly, don't you two read?
This is like you when you talk to me about sports. Oh my God, this person was traded. And I'm like, who? Honestly, don't you know?
It's so funny. But then she continues to talk about Nicholas Flamel, and he's currently 658 years old. And she says, see, said Hermione, when Harry and Ron had finished, the dog must be guarding Flamel's Sorcerer's Stone. I bet he asked Dumbledore to keep it safe for him because they're friends and he knew someone was after it. That's why he wanted the stone moved out of Gringotts. And then Harry says, a stone that makes gold and stops you from ever dying, said Harry. No wonder Snape's after it. Anyone would want it. Two questions come out of this. One. Just because anyone would want it doesn't mean that Snape specifically wants it, because anyone would want it. But let's just say,
I wouldn't want it.
But let's just say, for the sake of argument, that it is in fact Snape who desires it most. I would think that Dumbledore would know that. And why in God's name would Dumbledore bring the Sorcerer's Stone to Hogwarts if it was Snape who's really after it? Can you explain the logic to me?
Listen, once again, this was originally written for children, and we're being led to believe, you know, that Snape's not a great guy. It's all good. But of course, you know, this is something I wanted to pull out was as the match grew nearer, Harry became more and more nervous. He didn't know whether he was imagining it or not, but he seemed to keep running into Snape wherever he went. At times, he even wondered whether Snape was following him, trying to catch him on his own. Potions lessons were turning to weekly torture. Could Snape possibly know if they'd found out about the Sorcerer's Stone? Harry didn't see how he could, yet he sometimes had the horrible feeling that Snape could read minds. Guess what?
He can.
Snape can read minds. Snape is probably the best mind reader that we know in the Harry Potter books.
Absolutely. It's Legilimens, right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
He is able to perform this, of course, later on in other books to learn more about Harry. And Snape can also hide his own thoughts because he needs to be able to hide them from Voldemort. Mm-hmm. So I think Snape was reading Harry's mind. Harry felt this way even when the troll came in and Snape was kind of glaring at him, and Harry said he felt like he was trying to read his mind. I bet you Snape has been trying to see what these kids are up to and is now realizing the kids know about the dog. Mm-hmm. They know about the Sorcerer's Stone. I need to keep them away because girl keeps trying to get to it too.
Oh, sorry. One of the things that actually happens, and I think one of the reasons why Harry and the trio continue to associate Snape with the Sorcerer's Stone, especially after this chapter, is because the Sorcerer's Stone provides two things: everlasting life and gold. Those are two things that people benefit from in a greedy, self-serving way. And what have we seen throughout this entire book so far is that Slytherins are far more greedy and far more self-serving than any other of the houses. As such, it's only natural for the trio to start associating Professor Snape because he is the head of House Slytherin, and the fact that they have this blinding hate of him. No matter what Snape does, they are going to assume that it's for the worse. And when we get to after the match, this is a primary example of that. When Harry sees after he's won, and it's 5 minutes later, and he sees Professor Snape walking into the Forbidden Forest.
He can tell it's him by the way he walks.
I know.
He's such an awkward walker, and he starts to run.
So when he walks in there, the first thing Harry does is assume that it's for sinister-looking purposes, or for sinister purposes, rather. It's not sinister. In fact, I would say that, I mean, to Harry's hateful eye, it's sinister, but in fact, it's quite the opposite. And it's really for Harry's own protection and for the school's protection that Snape is doing this. I mean, I'm not wrong, right?
Agreed.
Right.
Yeah. No, it's very craftily written. We're from the kid's perspective. And in addition to feeling this way about Snape and having it just sprinkled throughout, the fearing of Snape, thinking that he's reading their minds, thinking that he has something out for him, we also have the sprinklings of just other Slytherins acting poorly. We have Crabbe and Malfoy and Goyle during the Quidditch match. You know, Malfoy's just repeatedly picking on Ron and Neville, and you know, making fun of how Ron's family's poor, and making fun of Neville and how he's not that smart and with it. And luckily, Ron and Neville go and pound these boys, and they get into quite a tuffle. Mm-hmm. But you're right; this whole chapter is like painting Slytherins. If you're Slytherin, you are bad in this chapter. And because of that, when we see the interactions with Harry flying over above, which I just thought was so cool that he got his broom, he just took it out of the shed when he wanted to go and spy on Snape, and he just flew above the trees and really, you know, like hid ever so carefully up top, and while he's watching Snape and Quirrell talk, the way that it is written, because we've spent this entire chapter thinking and seeing things from Harry's perspective about Slytherins being bad, that when we hear Snape talk to Quirrell, we see it through that perspective. But when you read it actually as Snape trying to stop Quirrell,
right,
you see it for what it is. And this is what's so fun about doing a reread like this.
Especially when it comes to the end of the conversation between Quirrell and Snape, when he says, "Very well," Snape cut in, "we'll have another little chat soon when you've had time to think things over and decided where your loyalties lie." Excellent stuff. Mm-hmm. That can be twisted either way when you think about it. And because Harry is 11 years old and he does have this blind hate of Snape, we cannot take that as true gold. We cannot take that as something that is terra firma in eyes of perspective. Mm-hmm. Harry is blinded. Harry's perspective, Harry as the narrator, is not reliable. He cannot be trusted. So we have to take that perspective with a grain of salt. And that even furthers, this is even furthered by one of the last paragraphs of this chapter. So we were right. It is the Sorcerer's Stone, and Snape's trying to force Quirrell to help him get it. He asked if he knew how to get past Fluffy, and he said something about Quirrell's hocus pocus. I reckon there are other things guarding the stone apart from Fluffy. Loads of enchantments, probably. And Quirrell would have done some anti-dark arts spell, which Snape needs to break through. "So you mean the stone's only safe as long as Quirrell stands up to Snape?" said Hermione in alarm. "It'll be gone by Tuesday."
Such a good line,
said Ron.
It's only, oh my God, only Quirrell can get in between them. "It'll be gone by Tuesday." Oh my goodness.
It's great to know that the end of the book, these kids are 100% wrong, and they have mirrored the two when they really mm-hmm. shouldn't be. And one last thing I want to call out here is Harry's interaction with Dumbledore. It's a blink and you'll miss it type interaction. Something that I think further evolves our theory that Dumbledore is far more in control of the situation than we like to think. Mm-hmm. At the end of the match, as Gryffindors came spilling onto the pitch, he saw Snape land nearby, white-faced and tight-lipped. Then Harry felt a hand on his shoulder and looked up into Dumbledore's smiling face. "Well done," said Dumbledore quietly, so that only Harry could hear. "Nice to see you haven't been mm-hmm. brooding about that mirror. Been keeping busy. Excellent." Oh, man.
Yeah. I'm glad you're not looking at that mirror again. Keese, you forgot about that mirror right. again, because I noticed you haven't gone looking for that mirror again.
Right, right. But it's also, I think, it's turning Harry's desire on itself, right? Because mm-hmm. the mirror of Erised is desire backwards, right? So Voldemort, Dumbledore knows that the mirror of Erised is one way, and Harry is turning his desires not into what he thinks is important with the mirror and his family, but his actual real life family in the world that he has right now, and putting his efforts towards something else. It's almost as if Dumbledore is saying, "Yes, I know that was something, but this is not your path. Get off of that and get onto the path that I've set for you. And you're already doing it, and you're doing a good job." And because of that, because he wins the game and has all of this stuff and this praise from Dumbledore, Harry once again has something other than just his name. He's not Harry Potter famous kid. He's Harry Potter, the kid who won mm-hmm. the Quidditch match within 5 minutes, and Dumbledore praises him for it. It's something that he's earned, which is a big deal. A big deal. Anything else you want to say about this chapter?
No. I want to see if we had any fun emails.
We got to do different perspectives. You want to take a different perspective?
You go. Oh, wait. Let's do the emails first, and then I'll do a different perspective.
Okay.
Oh, Miles here.
That's one of the new sounds.
Love it.
Yeah, it's because I'm awesome.
Love it.
So remember, everybody, if you do have questions for us, you can send them to maryandblakemedia@gmail.com or just go to maryandblake.com, click that little contact button, and you'll see a place where you can put the messages. Or if that does not suit your fancy, that's okay too. Just join us on the live, whether it is YouTube or it is Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. You can send your questions to us that way. So people, we're going to read the emails that we had. And then from there, if anybody's live, send us your questions on the live. This one comes from Kyle Ann. She says, have either of you ever read The Secrets of the Immortal Nicholas Flamel by Michael Scott? It has nothing to do with Harry Potter, but another extremely good teen young adult fiction series based on the character that is introduced in Harry Potter. But as Blake mentioned with the last chapters, he, Nicholas Flamel, was a real person. So maybe the books are based more in that. So she says, one of the excerpts here is Nicholas Flamel was a French scribe and a manuscript seller. After his death, Flamel developed a reputation as an alchemist, believed to have been discovered by the Philosopher's Stone and to have thereby achieved immortality. And these legendary accounts first appeared in the 17th century from Wikipedia. So you can see how the legend of Nicholas Flamel grows, because he was alive in the 1300s, yet all of these books about him are coming out in the 17th century.
Yeah.
Like, how is that possible? Like, that's 400 years worth of difference.
Interesting.
You know, you see what I'm saying?
Interesting. No, I have not read it.
I have not read it yet either, but if it's by Michael Scott, I am in. Because Michael Scott is the best. And not that Michael Scott, but the real Michael Scott from The Office. This one comes from Rebecca. She says, hey, Team Mary and Blake, you may have already figured this out, but we find out that Dumbledore suspected Quirrell early on in the chapter The Prince's Tale in Book 7, when we dive into Snape's memories. And I was right in my memory of that chapter when Dumbledore says to Snape, hey, could you just do me a favor and check on Quirrell? He seems a little off. So something that's like that. So just those are a couple of things that we got there. Let's see. Any questions?
Friends, ask us questions as we delve into a different perspective of this chapter.
Yes. All right. Think about them. And then we will. JL Cray says maybe he went to Cregna Dune. Oh, that's funny. Okay. Let's get to the next sound that I got.
Holy cricket. You're Harry Potter. I'm Hermione Granger. And you are?
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. You like that, huh?
I do like that.
It's because
time. Yeah. Nice. So perspective-wise, Blake, are you gearing to pick somebody?
Yeah, absolutely. My choice is Snape. I love taking Snape.
Severus Snape.
Dumbledore! the Potter puppets. I think Snape in this particular portion of the book must be going bananas. Not only is he trying to protect Harry, but he's got people lighting him on fire. In the previous chapter.
Worst babysitting job ever.
And he has to stop Quirrell. He really can't tell anybody that he's protecting Harry and stopping Quirrell because he doesn't want to give up any of more information about Quirrell in case that it is somehow related to Voldemort. Like, he's got all of these things happening all at once. And on top of that, he is trying to get Slytherin to win Hufflepuff to win the match so that Slytherin can be the number one house. Snape must be having anxiety attacks.
Oh, yeah.
Like serious.
What do you think he does to, like, burn off steam?
That's a good question. Mm. I bet you he eats Swiss cake rolls.
Oh.
Like, that's his thing.
Okay, but I mean, it's not really like a magical food.
It doesn't have to be magical. Okay. Maybe he's doing
pumpkin
it because,
pasties.
Maybe because he's like, dude, I bet you Snape seems to me like he's got a real sweet tooth.
Okay.
Like, I feel that like that's his thing. Like, he doesn't want anybody to know about it.
Okay.
He's like, I don't want anybody to know, but I got pumpkin pasties like stored up in like a fake drawer. Yeah. Or no, like in a fake wall. Like, all he does is just touches it and the wall opens up and there's this whole storage of like little Debbie pumpkin pasties.
I love it. I love it. You know, I wanted to take a look at this chapter from Neville's perspective. You know, he's been just tortured and tormented pretty much half of a school year now through his peers, especially particularly by Malfoy. He's doubted his time being in Gryffindor. He's started to have some friends, but nothing really big time. I mean, yes, he did see Fluffy. He saw the three-headed dog with Harry, Ron, and Hermione, but he hasn't gone back for it. And we haven't really been seeing him hang out with these guys, with this trio, that much. Mm. But then, of course, Harry gives him a nice pep talk. You know, he gives him the chocolate frog and they have a little moment together. And then later on during the game, he's fed up. He's fed up with Malfoy picking on him. He tells him, I'm worth 12 of you, Malfoy. He restates what Harry told him. You know, he finally has the courage to be like, no, I'm worth more than this. And I'm actually worth more than you. Granted, a little bit shakily, but he's sitting there with his friends. And Ron and he together, as friends, stand up. They stand up to the bully. And they give Crabbe and Goyle a good beating. They get it themselves, but they're proud of it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think had Neville been bullied physically in the bleachers during the Quidditch match and just come back from it later on, you know, with a bloody nose or something like that, he would have just kind of like snuck in, you know, quiet, look up, happened again. But he was proud of his wounds this time because he stood up for himself, but he also stood up with a friend. Mm-hmm. And I feel really proud of him because this is the first time that he is really choosing to act in this brave friendship way with his peers.
And notice that since actually Harry has become the seeker of Gryffindor and has achieved some fame of his own, Malfoy has kind of moved away from Harry. He's kind of stopped picking on Harry and he's moved to more lower, you know, the lower hanging fruit. In Ron and especially Neville. So it just kind of, it just goes to show you the kind of character that Malfoy has.
Yes.
We got some questions from the live feed. Rebecca asks, who is our little lass's favorite character so far in the series since we're reading them to the kiddos? Who is your favorite Harry Potter character?
My favorite Harry character is Hagrid.
Hagrid.
Why is he your favorite?
My favorite.
Why do you like Hagrid?
Hagrid is my favorite because he has this magic umbrella.
Oh, that's such a good umbrella.
And what color is that umbrella? Do you remember?
It's pink.
And whose favorite color is pink?
Me.
Yeah, that's right. All right, Laura asks, was Snape a better Legilimens and Occlumens than Dumbledore?
Great question. I would say yes. I would say yes because Dumbledore didn't see Tom Riddle for who he was. Mm-hmm. And I would also say yes because he gives these jobs to Snape rather than him teaching Harry Occlumens, rather than he keeping his eye on Quirrell, he has Snape do these things. So I do think that this was something that Snape did very well. Maybe Dumbledore was just a little busy, but
I think one of the things too is when Dumbledore has Snape teach Harriet, I think it's because he doesn't want Voldemort to have that connection. Mm-hmm. Like if you remember, Dumbledore is avoiding Harry throughout all of Book 5 until, you know, until the end or whatever it was.
And since it can kind of rebound as we're able to see, you're right.
He has to keep himself. So I think textually there's an argument to be made either way. Mm. But having said that, Snape is pretty damn good.
I also kind of wonder how much of legitimacy and occlumency is more of a dark arts trait. Mm-hmm. I mean, is it pure? Is it good to be reading other people's minds and to be invading other people's lines? Or is that something that you would more be studying if you're more into the dark arts?
Oh, nice hat, Felicity. She's wearing Mary's Lion hat, for those of you on the podcast app. I think it's definitely, it feels to me one of those gray areas. Like, you can do it, but you really shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
You should not be reading someone's
mind. Dumbledore is probably great at anything he does.
That's true. Anna Ashley says, have you guys read any of the Tales of the Beetle or the Bard? The one that Hermione gets passed down from Dumbledore after he passes away. There's one on Audible, by the way. Mm-hmm. I have not read them, but Mary, we do own it.
Yes,
and Mary has read it. Mary has read it. She's read it to the kids, as a matter of fact. Let's see. Any other questions?
Doesn't make any sense to them.
No, not really. Really goes from that point. Jayla says, yes, Dumbledore wanted to keep his distance, but it's also because Snape is such a good at occlumens that he could resist Voldemort's legilimency. Yes, that is true. All right. Any other questions for anybody? This is your final couple of minutes to do that. Yeah.
We want to thank you all for taking the time to leave us reviews in your podcast app. Once again, it's allowing a lot of people to learn about the Potterverse. Please make sure that you hit that share button, or you could screenshot the podcast and share into your stories. Letting people know that the Potterverse exists is really, really important, because people learn about podcasts generally via word of mouth.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Let's close this bad boy out. I don't see any particular questions coming in at the moment. All right. Let's do it.
We want to thank you all once again for tuning in for this, the latest episode of the Potterverse. We're already over halfway through the Sorcerer's Stone, so keep those reviews coming in. Keep on hanging out with us, and don't forget to join in live. You can get our complimentary texting reminders by texting the number 81010, and in the message field, text @elderwand.
Thank you for all the reviews, everybody. We've been getting a ton in lately, and I'm very happy about that. We're just about to get to 50. I would love to get to at least 55 by the time our next episode clears. So that's that. Go to jointhenerdclan.com if you find any value in what we do here in the Potterverse. If you want to help continue to support Mary and I, please do so, just for as little as $2 a month, and you get access to the new Midnight Sun Blake's Book Club version.
Woohoo!
So if you're a big fan of Twilight, I am going ahead and diving deep, as we are with Harry Potter, into Midnight Sun.
On that note, it's time to close on out, my friends. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake.
Mischief managed.